introduce really quick who we have up on the stage. Who's going to be contributing today? We have Dennis King from Northwestern University. And we have John Cameron from Indiana University. Hannah Frost from Stanford. And then Stephen Van Tile from Oregon State. And Rick Johnson from Notre Dame. So thanks everyone for agreeing to participate and help us out this afternoon or this morning. So to give you guys kind of an idea of how I'm going to orient this, what we're going to start with is just giving our panelists a little bit of an opportunity to introduce themselves. What I'm hoping everyone can kind of delve into just a little bit is taking a small amount of time to talk a little bit about your experience with either service management or product ownership. I'd be really interested to hear a little bit about like any service management or product ownership positions you've held. Maybe a little bit about organizational structures at the institutions where you've worked as it relates to the position. And then also maybe just a little bit about like some challenges you faced or the lessons you learned across those challenges. And then maybe any advice for new adopters, new adopters of service management. And from there, like, you know, we don't have to hit all the high points, so just want to get like, a little bit of introductions going. And then at that point, I really want to get the all you folks to be able to like just, you know, whatever questions you might have, regardless of what they are, it's related to service management, just kind of like we'll get some discussion going. So from here, I'll go ahead and hand it off to Deb. Do you want to like start us off?
I actually sat here so I'd be last, but. So I'm Deb King, and I am the repository community manager at Northwestern University. And the way that I was hired half on the Mellon grant for Avalon Development and half from Northwestern. So I am the acting service manager for our instance of Avalon, which makes a lot of sense because I know what's going on with that. But it's, you know, this kind of really interesting other duties as needed thing that I have taken up that takes up a whole lot more time than I had expected it to. So that's kind of where I am with it. And I will say that because of the way I was hired and what I've been hired to do and stuff, it's been great because I really get a better sense of our community through service management and just who our users are and their use cases and things like that, which has been really incredibly helpful. At the same time, because I'm so involved on the development side as well, I feel this real need to protect my developers when things come up. And so kind of figuring out what the line is between both sides of an issue. So that's kind of what I'm working on now, what I'm struggling with. And I'll pass it along.
Yeah, hi, I'm John. So it's a lot of stuff. So my title at Indiana University is a digital media service manager. And so in addition to managing the production instances of Avalon at IU, I'm also a co-product owner on the IU side for Avalon. So it's kind of like the hair club for men. I'm not just a product owner, I'm also a service manager. So it's really interesting. So kind of like Deb said, like, you know, somebody's like, hey, this doesn't work right, or hey, this would be cool. And it's sort of, you need to be in a position to be like, okay, I can actually do that. Like, we can make it a priority or talk with people. And especially because at IU, we have our production instances take up a lot of our time because we're running our mass digitization projects. And so we have those instances of Avalon, and there's a lot of development work that goes into not only that project in Avalon specifically, but also the workflows that are related to that. And so it's sort of like a, you know, a gigantic project. And then the other stuff that we have, so our current challenges are like moving from variations. The variations digital music library, if you're familiar with that, is a streaming application for audio. And has a lot of pedagogical tools, has, you know, playlist features and all these sort of things that people have been using for years. And we're moving from that to Avalon. And coming from variations to Avalon, there's sort of like a paradigm shift of how the software works, you know, what it's opinionated on, about how the content plays back, how it's structured. And working with the, you know, actual users who are, you know, either frustrated or pleased or have a lot of ideas about, you know, mm-hmm. how it should work, is certainly an interesting challenge. So it is kind of unique. So in my department, I'm in a group called Digital Election Services. Shout out to my colleague Nick Hometa back there. He's a super cool dude and right across the cubicle from me. So, you know, mainly I work with the audio and video collections, of course. And so, you know, a lot of my time is interacting with people who actually use the product. And it's cool, and then the other half, you know, is ad block development. So it's kind of like two jobs in one, and it's pretty challenging that way. Let's see.
I love hearing about all of this. My name is Hannah from Stanford Libraries. I started as a product owner back in 2009. We were putting what I believe is the first Hydra head in the world. It was our ETD submission application. And Tom said, here, Tom Kramer, you're going to be the product owner for this. And I didn't even really know what that meant. But we did it. We figured it out. And then and there wasn't so much service to wrap around that, per se, at the time, for reasons that aren't interesting to go into. But a couple years later, we wanted to work on just a generic self-service IR deposit interface. And so there's a lot of similarities with ETDs. It was a natural for me to take that on as well. So we built that pretty quickly. And then we're like, okay, now we got to start the service side. We've got the product. Now we got to start the service. And that was really the first time we used this notion of service management in a digital library context explicitly. So it's just kind of evolved for us since there. And then we've added a web archiving services manager, and now we have a Spotlight, or our instance of Spotlight exhibits at Stanford. We have a service manager for that, and we're going to be hiring a digitization services manager. So this is very much part of our organizational structure. And to get back to your question about structure, so at Stanford Digital Library Systems and Services, we have like kind of operations, so DevOps and sysadmins. We have application developers, infrastructure developers, and then product and service managers. And I was lucky enough to take over leading that group earlier this year. So it's a lot of like project matrix management, which has challenges. We manage.
which area did you say that it was that you're overseeing?
The product and service management group.
Okay.
So that's repository services, digitization services, to some extent web archiving, but it's kind of its own thing, and like the exhibits program and that sort of thing. So one of the things, some of my burning issues that I would love to talk about today are, I was very intrigued about the notion of this group combining with, the interest group combining with Agile, because this has actually been a focus of ours over the last year. Like, how are we going to really do Agile? We found that things were getting away from us a little bit, and we needed to be more intentional about how we were structuring our work and putting people into roles. And we spent a lot of time on this early January, February, March. And we put together some documents, which I'd be happy to share. And maybe the roles one in particular would be interesting. But it gets to something you were just saying, and I realize I'm rambling, but... what we found is that when the product owner and the service manager are one person, it's much better because of just what you said. But now we have situations, because we have so many things going on and not enough people to put with each one, that we have a product owner for this and a separate service manager. And that really does complicate the service management piece of it, being able to follow through and just kind of speak with authority about what you can do for a service when you have a lot of competing resources that are managed by somebody else. So so that's one thing that I would like to talk about today. I'm sure others will come up.
I'm Steve Van Tile. I'm I guess I'm called a digital repository librarian at Oregon State University. And what that means is that I am, well, it's meant a lot of things in the 2 years only that I've been at Oregon State. So what that means right now is that I am a sort of day-to-day manager of the institutional repository at Oregon State, product owner of that repository, and kind of co-conspirator for our migration to a new platform. I don't know what role that puts me in, but it feels like its own special thing that I don't know what to call. I didn't know what a product owner was until I got to Oregon State, and on my first day, Aviva and Karen pulled me into Aviva's office and said, "Hey, you're the product owner for Scholars Archive." And I was like, "I don't know what that is." And they started to explain it, and I was like, "Oh, I've done product ownership before. I just haven't done it in name. I've managed a lot of small projects and large projects on the technical side, and that all kind of feels the same. It's sort of, you have this thing that you're responsible for and you're advocating for." Service management was a new concept to me until HydroConnect 2 years ago, when I can't remember who was running that session. I think Karen was involved, but there was a service management workshop like there was on Monday, and again, it was like, I don't know what this is until people started talking about it, and then I was like, oh yeah, I've done that before, or I've been doing that for a while. And it was nice to know that there was a name to put on it and some boundaries to kind of draw around what it is. And so I think one of the things that I'm struggling with, if I can take a moment to ramble, because that's what I do, is that there are these kind of names for these roles that exist, and there are a lot of roles that can exist around a product or a project, and depending on the size of your institution, you may have the ability to have someone in each of those individual roles, or you may have to have someone who's responsible for all of those roles, and especially when you start collapsing roles into one person. And I think especially when that one person is also in the same department potentially as like the developers for that project, what types of conflicts of interest do you start seeing, and how can you avoid those types of conflicts as much as possible?
All right, so I'm Rich Austin from Hesperic Libraries in Notre Dame again, and myself, I would not sure I would call myself personally a service manager. I think it depends on your definition a little bit. Because, like Steve was just talking about, we have people serving a variety of roles. And my official title is, I'm a program director of our digital initiatives and scholarship program, so akin to a department. But I'm also analogous to a repository manager. So I have been working with some of those aspects from that perspective. But one of the things that, again, that Steve mentioned, stealing my thunder a little bit. But actually, I think it was at HydroConnect in 2014. I'm fuzzy on the exact year, but in Cleveland, I remember the place, when Tony Navarrete and Hannah Frost were talking about some of the various things that they've been doing at Stanford, and also Patricia Shui as well at Penn State, really bring out some of the ideas that I think really started to just all of a sudden clicked on some of the things that were. Tony was one that, if you haven't met him before, and I will try to do my best. But one of the things, as I understand, bringing a lot of just community, industry, best practices into this, and the way it was framed just all of a sudden really clicked about how when you're bringing out a service, you need to be thinking about not just a project from cradle to grave, but thinking about how you're going to support that. So that really clicked for us, and for me especially, in thinking about, hey, we need to actually do something about this in Notre Dame, where we spin up projects like crazy, then move on to our next project, and then the user of that tool may hope that someone talks to them again in the future, right? So that's kind of how things work.
Yeah.
So coming off of that, I've pretty much fought tooth and nail to get someone into a product owner role So we actually have two product owners, so getting to the organizational structure for our repository. And this was my idea of having, because our repository is, we chose to have one single repository for everything, there's a pretty wide community you're trying to serve. So I had the idea of thinking about one product owner focuses on humanities and digital collections communities, and then the other focuses on STEM and research data. So we have Don Brower, who is a product owner for STEM research data, and then Ruth Tillman, who is for humanities and digital collections. And by mention of fighting tooth and nail, I fought extremely hard to get product owner written into her position description before she was hired. And that was something that I had to fight multiple times to retain. But now as a result of that, our manager is saying, we need a product owner for every product. So it was like this catalyst that all of a sudden everyone saw the benefits of this. So it was something that was really nice and really gratifying that sparked something at our institution. But so again, from the aspect of me being a product owner or not, I'm also involved with the shared project with ARL, and I have recently taken on more of a product owner role of that project, where I'm starting to work closely with the Center for Open Science to lay out requirements and roadmaps. And I haven't sort of fully attained authority ownership of the product owner roles in that sense. So I'm kind of trying to walk a little bit of a line between I'm a community member, part of the team, managing things, but also trying to negotiate ideas, authority kind of as I go, and I can get into more detail about that stuff. But I think if there is time, I definitely would love to talk more about kind of the history of the ideas that came through from Stanford and from Penn State and others.
That's fantastic. I'm really glad that we've got these discussions going on. And there are definitely like a few things in particular that we'd be able to get into in the next little time. And so, but before going any further, I wanted to kind of just like open up the floor and our folks up here give them like a good introduction to themselves and kind of like what they've been working on, what kind of challenges they've had. But really the purpose of the panel talk is to be able to bring more out for the community. So I really want to just open up the floor and like see what questions you folks have. Is there anything in particular that you wanted? That you heard any of the our panelists talk about that you want to?
I'd like to just hear more detail about the enumeration of roles.
Hear more about the enumeration of roles, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm really interested in what you were saying, Hannah, about combining the product owner and the service manager.
So let me go ahead and ask, when you say enumeration of roles, like how do different roles get decided on? And can you describe it more?
Because we have such a small team to work with, we do have a problem with boundaries in terms of where one person's role really, where their responsibilities are for that particular role that they embody.
So kind of like, where does one person's responsibility start and another person's responsibility end? Like,
exactly.
What are those boundaries?
So what roles have we identified that you need in order to move your project forward?
So this is actually something we talked about a little bit in the workshop on Monday. We talked about the, have you ever heard of racing agents? So it's, okay, what is it, roles, responsibility, accountability, I can't remember.
Consultant
and informed. So what that does is kind of gets an idea of like what the different responsibilities might be, the different roles are, and then you see like what types of responsibilities they have. But the roles in particular I've never seen on there. I think there are different ones for different organizations: product owner, service manager, developer, like infrastructure developer. Administrator, like those are the kind of things we have set up. But I think like looking into a racing matrix and kind of like kind of checking that out, we have resources on the particularly this is something for everyone here who's interested in service management. There's our service management interest group wiki page on DuraSpace, and uploaded a lot of documents and information. There's some stuff from 2014, 2015, and there's also like stuff that we did in a workshop on this Monday as well. So there's a lot of good information on there, different presentations. But let's see, if any of you guys would like to pick up where talking about what the different roles are as you've seen them in your organization. And then also, I guess, we had another question about, like, again, the kind of following in that same theme, like, a little bit more within your experience on the difference between service management and product ownership, if that's something that you want to tease out. So we have volunteers.
Sure. I can give an example from our organization. Well, I'll list some of the roles that we've articulated. I mean, they've been mentioned, but service manager who does a lot of the kind of the outward engagement with the users of your product or products, because I think sometimes a service can have multiple products involved in it. And so that's a lot of, you know, outward communication and engagement. And then the product owner is really more inwardly focused on the software or whatever it is that you're building, like the thing. And it takes input from the users, the stakeholders, puts them in the backlog, to use some more jargon from Agile and so forth, and prioritizes them based on what the needs are and the constraints are and how many resources you've got and all that kind of stuff. And then there's project manager, which sometimes comes into play with software products, sometimes doesn't. That's actually kind of an interesting topic too, maybe. Those are kind of the three big ones I see. Am I missing anything? I mean, obviously software developer.
What is a project manager?
And community manager? Okay, sorry. I know I love the notion of community manager. We don't have one at, you know.
My grant runs out in June.
And so a project manager is more about, okay, we've got this work to do, and we're going to schedule it, and I'm going to arrange the meetings and take the notes and make sure everybody's communicated with and that things are following schedule. I mean, that sounds kind of rigid, but it's actually very useful to have somebody who's stepped outside of some of these other very engaged activities to just kind of keep things moving forward. So, and then to get to what Amy was saying about combining it. So, when we started our ETD Hydra Head and then our self-deposit Hydra Head, as I said, we built the product and then we had to go out and say, hey, we have this thing and you should use it because here's why you need it. And that's the service side of it. And then what's useful about having one person doing that is that then when you come back to your department, your desk, you turn everything that you just got, all the feedback, all the input, the requirements, the good news, you know, the positive, yay, we love your thing. You turn that back and feed it back into the repository at the product development process. But when it's split across people, there's suddenly you have this gap between the two, and you got to figure out how that's going to go smoothly. And the situation we have right now is that we have Spotlight, the software product, the code. And so we have a person at Stanford who is the product owner for that. But we've implemented exhibits for collections, and that's kind of a service that somebody goes and sells and gets people to use it and helps them and, you know, takes feedback. And then we've also are starting to leverage it for more academic kind of course support for portfolios, student portfolios. That's a whole other thing than talking to curators about their image collections. So now you've got these two streams of input to your product going to one product owner. And it just suddenly opens up all these questions. And this is pretty new for us, and we're trying to figure it out. So I don't have any brilliant ideas other than, oh, it'd be so much better if it could just be one person. But that's just, as you grow, I mean, if your product is good and can serve multiple constituencies or groups of stakeholders, this is gonna happen. So that's what I have to say about that.
Something I forgot to mention is we actually do have project managers as well as product owners.
Mm.
So very quickly, actually Hannah gave them a perfect description of what our project managers do. And so they manage making sure expectations are clearly scoped for a given project, for given timelines, things execute on time, making sure there are ample resources allocated for particular projects, and then our product owners, Don and Ruth, are very much focused on these are the requirements that are most important, these are things that are, and so they still spec out a given project, but then the project manager takes that and makes sure everyone agrees on what those expectations are. And the fact that our product owners have garnered so much acceptance is really attributed to the work that Don and Ruth have done as well, where they actually had us, the development team, technically slowed down a little bit, but to everyone outside, the feedback we get is that it feels like things are happening faster. So as a result of it, our product owners have been able to focus the efforts of the team much more closely to what those aspects are. So Don and Ruth, I would say they are a combined service manager and product owner role, and then we also have that at project managers as well.
So sort of speaking to this relatively small body of personnel, I mean, we have compared to a lot of other institutions, a fairly large developer base, but one of the things that I think is probably important, I think Hannah hinted at this, is that the project management role, which we have a person who does project management for our tech projects, that person needs to be fairly disconnected to an extent from the products and services. They need to understand what's going on and what the things are for and why we do these things, but they need to be able to kind of step outside of that so that they can manage across projects at sort of a certain layer of depth, and then you have the service and or service managers or product owners who are kind of taking deep dives on the each individual thing. So you can kind of look at it that way, that the project manager is kind of looking across and the service or product owner is looking deep down, and where those intersect is where you try to kind of like figure out who's doing what when and what's important to prioritize and all of those types of things. So I think at the very least it's useful to have a set of product owners or service managers or both and someone across who's doing project management.
Yes, what I forgot to mention is that I'm also fairly new to product ownership and service management to a degree, so I just started working at Indiana University Libraries in January. And so I had, you know, heard of like, some of the basic concepts of Agile and Scrum, but I hadn't really, you know, experienced them in a work environment, like, you know, being thrown in and having to sort of like learn what the role of product owner is, and then, you know, how it relates to the team. And Agile can be so fluid, so it's kind of like, you know, how fluid or how reactive do you want to be based on what you're doing and the practices in the development, you know, sort of every day. We've changed a lot of our workflows and just our Agile methodology over this the last 6 months a lot. But when I think of, like, you know, product owner versus service manager, it's a little different because we have multiple services that are running Avalon. And I think the users don't care about Avalon. Maybe they don't know what Avalon is. They know what Media Collections Online is, and they know that they have a body of content. And then, you know, I have separate documentation for Media Collections Online, and there's documentation for Avalon. So Avalon has the, you know, guide that's for collection managers in the generic sense. And then Media Collections Online, we have, you know, best practices for naming your collection, or here's what you want to see, or here's what I can recommend for the type of media that you would maybe want to upload, or I can give you advice on the size or the type of your files. and sort of help through the process, or you know, do one-on-one tutorials and things like that. And so, to a certain extent, there's kind of like a you know division between the services that are offered and then what the product is itself. And you know, I can sort of take that feedback and then write stories. But when I'm writing stories, you know, I have a product under hat on, and I'm not thinking necessarily about the specific thing, you know, except maybe. You know, just in terms of trying to prioritize the work, I guess, because it's sort of like, you know, how do I prioritize our time, and especially in our team, it's interesting because all of the people who work on Avalon at IU are also working on production issues at IU. So if something goes wrong, you know, they get allocated, and it's sort of like, how do we divide up their time so we can sort of get the most out of it, so core Avalon can be developed, and then also our instances of Avalon can be developed. And then it's sort of like, what we have, you know, three instances of Avalon, and one is like for a very specific purpose, which is for the School of Social Work. And so it's, you know, kind of like its own thing. And when I'm talking with the person who's the collection manager there, you know, again, she doesn't care about Avalon, she cares about, you know, providing access to, you know, these videos for social work students so they can access, you know, this sensitive content that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. And then, you know, the School of Social Work has its own programmer who does, you know, special permission setup. So these sort of things are sort of divorced, but they're, you know, very, very specific to the whatever specific services we're offering. And sort of, you know, that's a lot of work that's sort of unrelated to the product itself. But it's really cool because my first job was managing a program called Web Checkout for the College of LSA at Michigan. And it was basically an application that tracked you know, expensive pieces of equipment and the equipment loan operation. So it's like, you know, tens of thousands of pieces of equipment and students going back and forth. And it's sort of like that sort of vended application model can be a total, you know, pain in the ass, because I vividly remember like spending 2 weeks over email trying to get them to change like one little thing in a particular configuration. And it was just like torture, and you know, having, you know, it's like, you know, explicitly saying what I want to someone, and someone on the other end is like, you know, half drunk or whatever, and they're like, you know, typing Java code, and it never turns out, and it's sort of like, oh my god, you know, I could actually, like, if this is a priority, and I feel like it is, you know, if somebody says, I would really like to see this, I can say, oh my god, you know, that's possible, I can do that. And it's sort of tough because, you know, there's a huge stack of things as a product owner I want to get done. There's things that the stakeholders want, and then, you know, somebody walks up and says, hey, I just want this one thing, it'll make my life 100 times easier, you know, and I'm thinking, well, it's not going to take that long, but at the same time, I need to write it up, we need to prioritize it, we need to talk about it. So it's kind of, like, frustrating in that sense, where it's like, I know I would love to make your life easier, and I want to, and it's sort of just like, you know, how can I get the little ones here and there and sort of keep us on track in a general way, and all the stuff that we want to put into the product.
You never know, right? That he's only been doing this since January.
Seriously.
So a couple of things that I'm hearing and hearing from the group as well. So one of the, I think, really interesting things for a bunch of us on the panel is that we're involved in creating software, and then we're also involved in running instances of software. And we actually, right around the time that John came on to Avalon, we decided that we needed kind of three separate Jira boards or waffle boards, one for the Northwestern instance production of Avalon, one for the core development, and then one for all of the IU instances of Avalon, because all it was starting to become just this giant cluster fuzz of work that not getting prioritized for the actual big project, but really prioritized for the each university. This is, of course, you know, we're developing Avalon over to institutions. So that's an interesting thing from a service management perspective. But one of the things that I've kind of heard that I'm thinking of is kind of the theme here is actually about agile. And when, you know, the idea that we're supposed to be constantly iterating software, and yet for service managers, I think it's the end game, right? Because it's already out there. It's already been done. So what? How does kind of service management fit into Agile if it's not tied to product ownership, right? Is that a really interesting idea? And then the other thing, I'm just making everything more complicated, but the other thing is with digital repositories, there are so many different kinds of end users, right? So part of my service management is the folks that are dumping movies in for course reserves and getting them to help, which is very different than a student not being able to play something, right? Different kinds of things. Or our metadata specialist who does a batch ingest and can't find any of her stuff after she's done that. So those are three huge different kinds of users, but we think of them all as end users. So the idea of a repository is really being such a three-dimensional use case complicates all of the work that we do, but also complicates the idea of iterations. So it's complicated. It should pay us all a lot more. That's what I'm trying to say.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm wondering what everybody else in the panel maybe this had to do with sort of like, I don't know, ancillary projects. Like, I inherited a bunch of stuff as service manager, so they're legacy services that run video and audio, like variations, and sort of, I'm also kind of service manager for them in a way, and which was sort of unexpected. And then, of course, there's the ones that, you know, it's really directly in charge. So I wonder if, you know, you have to deal with that at all, or.
Yeah, I have a situation, or I should say we, it's a collective situation, where we have a couple of software projects that we are no longer actively developing for good reasons, but people still use them, and people still have enhancements requests or, you know, issues about them, and it puts the service manager in an interesting spot. I mean, you have to still support the service. If it's in production, it's a service, right? People are using it. And so you can still build a backlog, I guess, even though it's not gonna get prioritized. But I mean, to some extent, it's useful to capture what the issues are for the next time you get to the project. You wanna know what were all those problems that we wanna make sure we don't repeat. So it's a whole, I think that's part of what you're talking about, legacy systems, and like how do you deal with those. And we're actually trying to sunset a system right now, and I've never done that before, so that I want to be really kind of thoughtful about it, and like, how do we want to document that this once existed and that this stuff came in the repository from that? Does that matter? You know, I mean, I think maybe it does. So that's a whole other interesting thing to think about.
I mean, I think one of the things that I'm experiencing right now is I was immediately thrown into sunsetting a major product on my first day, essentially, and it was like, hey, guess what? Write a report about migrating to Hydra from DSpace, and then do it. And so, I mean, in a way, this kind of like creates this Jekyll and Hyde problem when you are both the service manager and the product owner, right? So as the product owner of a DSpace repository and the product owner of a Hydra version of that same repository, so I have two products that I'm trying to deal with, they serve the same purpose, right? So I'm the service manager of both of those things. But I'm trying to sunset one and sunrise, is that a thing? Sunrise the other one. And so there's a lot of tiptoeing and sort of internal negotiation that has to happen about, you know, I'd say probably about 3 months ago, we stopped creating new tickets for issues in DSpace. And it was just like, and I know people are sick of hearing it from me now, but I'm like, that's going to be resolved in the new system. And I promise you, we've like put an issue into the new system's waffle board for that particular issue to make sure that it's not a problem there, but you're gonna have to wait until we get over there. And so, and as a but that's that Jekyll and Hyde piece, right? It's hard for me as a service manager to say that to an end user, but I know that I need to because I'm sort of seeing the kind of product side of things. And I wonder if you have separate service manager and product owner for a product, what does that relationship look like? I wonder if in some ways that's even harder because you then are trying to negotiate through more steps of people and more personalities to kind of like talk about what's going to happen when and should we stop creating issues in this old product and create them in a new product and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, we do kind of have our product ownership, service management of repository services all kind of mostly wrapped together, and we definitely have some things that do not get very much attention. And because of that, we've been trying to move heavily towards platform-based strategies of if something is old, could it be moved into a more platform-specific thing? But not everything can. And about a year ago, we started categorizing our different applications in a kind of three or four different categories. One, you know, being strategic active. Another has, you know, a fair amount of attention. Then another is like just bug fixes as needed. And another is we want to decommission this. We want to sunset it. And we definitely have probably three or four in that last category. I think we want to sunset, but haven't gotten around to. But for the middle category, for the ones that we want to devote some attention to, we started setting aside time every 6 weeks or so to do a sprint or two just on maintenance type of tickets, saying, you know, we know these strategic things are important, and we had fallen into this trap in the past where we spent a whole year and a half just doing that strategic project while these other things were languishing in the background. But now, as a result of having a more balanced approach, we've been able to garner more good favor for the things we're really excited about, as well as just trying to support those existing people. And a lot of the ideas that were really evangelized at the HyperConnect in Cleveland, already referenced, you know, talking about you need to own a service, it's a big, we really have tried to take ownership of that for really any application or service that we would be running. And it's also made it easier to really help people be patient with things that we're doing. If we're saying this is not a project that will never end, but we have all sets of services that have various projects that get spun up as needed. So we will spin up sometimes a project for a maintenance sprint. Like, we may have three or four projects defined, and that project might actually only have one feature in it, but that's kind of our framework for working.
Can I just mention something that occurred to me? So it seems like one of the things that maybe, I mean, we're all talking about it, but maybe we're not talking about it enough, is that part of the role that I feel like I play, and that I feel like probably most of the other people up here play, is one of kind of negotiating expectations in all directions. So out to end users, but then also negotiating expectations and promises to, you know, development team and system administrators and all these kinds of people, and it's like, what? and that's hard. And I think that to a certain extent, like, I feel like you have to kind of like take this like hyper analytical approach to dealing with just the ecosystem and saying like, none of this is personal, and like, we as an organization value these things, and so we don't have to, like, I don't have to lose my mind when this project doesn't get prioritized for the next sprint. And I guess it just sort of speaks to having a group of people who work well together and can communicate and, like, can have a hard discussion about, like, what's going to happen next or what can and can't we do, and then go, like, eat French fries afterwards and not worry about it, so...
Yeah, actually, I think that's like for the last 10 minutes or so, like, I've been thinking about like
what has been talked about so far and kind of clarifying things and some of the questions that are like lying underneath sort of what we've talked about. So I want to take on a little bit of that, just to clarify. Oh, I'm sorry, Sheila, it seemed like...
Just ask a question.
What's it?
Yeah. Do any of you, as a service manager, do end user training for the actual service? And sorry to take over.
That's okay. I'll get back to clarifying our attack. John,
go ahead.
Okay. That is such an awesome question. So in my other role as community manager, I did a whole bunch of user research for Northwestern's upcoming Next Generation repository. And one of the things that really stuck out so gigantically was that the rest of the library doesn't see the software that we're developing in-house as needing the same kind of training. That, you know, we just never put that part of it in place. So even though reference librarians are trained on all of the new databases and whatever that come, you know, that are bought, we don't do any of the in-house software that we develop as part of that training or that end user training. So that is a huge, huge part of what our next generation repository will look like, is making sure that particularly on the library, in the library, that people know what it is and know how to use it and that kind of thing. So that's been huge for us, and it's something that has been, I think, missing on the repository side, is thinking about the training. So that's an excellent question, and yeah, but it's, you know, it's just come into kind of our thinking about it.
So a follow-up question.
Oh.
Follow-up question.
Can I just add onto that before we go to another question?
Sure. Go ahead.
I just want to say that it'll be just a minute. yes, on the training. And one of the other things that we've done is try to get other people in the library to own how to use the software so they can go train the trainer. So you can get other people to do some of that training for you.
All right, before we get to other questions, who else was it that had a question? I just want to make sure I got to. Okay, all right. Well, it's good that we have questions. But so real quick, just to like again clarify, I think some of the things that's maybe good to cover is like we talked about the fact that like a service can have multiple products, can be dependent on multiple products, or you can have like multiple services or just branch off one product itself. So part of I think what's important for what when you go home and when you're like thinking about this stuff in your own institution. Probably like some of the stuff that's going to be most important is like how do you define a product? What is a product? What is a service? How are they different? And how are you defining those? Mapping those things onto mapping what you have into like your product and service and understanding what the relationship is, where you are, and what's going on with your institution. It did sound as though what a lot of folks were saying is that really what it comes down to is products more internal facing and then services is more outreach to like your users or your external users, your audience. So going back to something that Steve was saying earlier, which I think is critically important, is just the idea of, I guess for me what it comes down to is vision. Like understanding that, yes, we're all into this together, we're all going to like this place out there that we have a vision of, and sometimes we have to like sacrifice some things in order to get there because there's only so many resources we've got. So what that got me wondering about, the question that I would ask is, does it seem like a service manager is in some ways a more strategic role? Or would you say that like product owner and service manager are both strategic? I think about like getting strategic direction a lot more from like the outreach people who are actually using the services. But I think the overall important thing that I'd like to have folks get back to at some point is like, where within the product ownership role, the service management role, how does that line up with strategic alignment with, for the products and services that we have going on? But that's just something to consider on. Or, Rick, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, so I think having service management and product ownership again aligned together is strategic in my mind, where you're short-circuiting the communication between what is needed from the customer base versus the product direction. And one of the things that we have is actually both internal and external facing. Internal being more working with our various subject librarians.
I'm sorry, say again.
Working with our various subject librarians that then are also engaging with various people. So they're helping drive the strategic direction. And one of the things that also has been very beneficial is having someone like Ruth Tillman. She actually sits outside the technology group, and having someone involved in the process that is feels like this is one of us, as opposed to technology group and the rest of the librarians, that has also been extremely beneficial.
I just want to say kind of a bigger thing about strategy and outward-facing stuff and that kind of thing. Is really about how much trust your users have in you and your services. And if you're starting from a place where there's not a lot of trust, you have to spend, you know, 3 to 5 times as much time trying to build that back up. Somebody once told me that trust for a team, the best way to think about it is that everybody is putting into a savings account, and when you lose trust, it's like somebody just pulled money out of it without asking. And so they can put the money back, but you never get that teamwork together again. You can certainly come into a project where the trust is already lost. And part of it is just building it up, and so much of it is just communication. And so much of it is empathy as well. I know that you need this. And that's one of the reasons that I've tried to, with my users, try to do a red, yellow, green light in terms of understanding what the problem is. And, you know, does your work stop? Do you have a workaround, or do you just want us to know this for the future? But really hearing what that is, it doesn't put the money back in, but it does start you on a better path towards gaining that trust and having, you know, the idea that one person affects 1,000 people in their lives is true, is like one of the best things I can tell service managers. Because they will tell, you know, the person that you don't help will tell 20 people how unhelpful you are. The person that you do help will just go on with their day.
Yeah, so trust is super important. So, like I said, we recently migrated another audio streaming service to Avalon, and it really upset some people. And in one instance, you know, the server went down right when a class needed to use it for coursework, and the instructor was rightly angry. You know, he said, you know, you made me use this. You made me, you know, I trusted this thing for years, you made me switch, this thing doesn't work. And it doesn't really matter to the product, you know, it was a server issue, so it was something completely different, but from his perspective, you know, we were sort of like forcing him into something that was going to be to his destiny. To go back to training, so I do trainings with people, so it's not a whole lot because the number of collection managers that we have isn't too great in the greater scheme, but I like to do one-on-one, and it really makes it less scary for people. So I say, you know, hey, are you interested in using this service? You know, let's meet for an hour. I'll walk you through the application. I'll show you some other stuff that we have in here. And then, you know, sort of come out of that with more of a relationship. Like, they know who I am, they know what I look like, they know where I'm at. And it makes a lot of sense, because then when people want to ask, you know, they do come to me. And I really would prefer that people, you know, always email me or sort of go through it, and sort of they know who I am and what I can do.
I'll try and keep it quick. I know we're running out of time. Back to the question, this is all really great and relevant to my point. The question about how is product ownership / service management strategic? I think, you know, one of the important roles of a service manager is to communicate the benefit of whatever it is you're offering and demonstrate the value. And that is so critically important, I think, for digital library groups or programs as they're developing, because we're all looking for more resources to do what we want to do. We have these visions out there, and none of us have the resources that we need to get to that vision. It's just there's always more to do. There's always better things out there. And so I think it is strategic for those roles, because you can if you're explicitly demonstrating the value and communicating the benefit, that it helps you justify what you're doing and retain and procure more resources. So that's the goal anyway.
It also seems to make those prioritization decisions and like setting other hold applications a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Say, well, if we don't focus so much on that, we can focus on the other stuff. So,
So I'm curious to hear about your perspectives and how product ownership and service management ownership are connected through user experience and usability testing and assessment.
Mm. Great question.
I mean, I think that there are a lot of ways that those things connect in, right? So when I'm thinking specifically about this process that we're in right now of migrating, right? We have this kind of off the shelf thing called Sufia that we're going to be using for the repository, and that's been through some vetting. But there are elements of it that we know don't work well and won't work well for our users. And so as part of the development process, and as part of that migration project, we're expecting to have some kind of user testing of the system, and especially for our key stakeholders that do a lot of work in the system. So we have people who, upload hundreds of things a week into, like, one person uploads hundreds of things a week into the system, and like I'm gonna go talk to her and sit down and say like how do you feel about this, right? And what could we do? And so there's sort of an informal UX element there. But we've started to talk about maybe that there are some more formal UX things that we could be doing with it, maybe what you might consider more traditional, where we kind of like coerce people in to come and sit down in front of a computer and give them a Starbucks card or whatever to poke at some buttons. So as part of the kind of building of the new repository, there's a very clear role for trying to understand those things. But it also feels like there needs to be a continuing UX evaluation thing that happens into the future. And I'm not sure exactly what that looks like right now, but we know it's important, and we know, I think, generally in the library that we need to do more of it, and so we're kind of trying to navigate that space. It can also be hard to know what to do with that information, right? I think there are very few of us in our organization that are experts at UX related things, but we'll try our darndest we can. So
can I?
Oh, actually, yeah. I think we're running out of time, so I wanted to give one last person like an opportunity to ask a question.
Is there time? It's okay.
Well, we've got a few minutes left.
Okay. So my question just had to do with it speaks to your point, Rick, about having to make the case to put product owner in a job description or even have that be a job title. Because I think for many libraries, especially library administrators, that means nothing. just for the as a community, it might be nice if we could, how do you have that talk? How do you build that case?
Yeah.
And then how do you have that talk about service management as well? Not only at the library administration level, but even, with your colleagues. Because this group, speaking from my experience in Penn State, being a repository service manager, and then kind of like, just more, kind of like sliding into the role of service manager, but not really having anybody else understand what that is kind of a weird position to be in. And luckily, we now have, or I should say we, they.
It'll always be there.
An associate dean for technology, digital service management who understands that, but then you've got the rest of the libraries who work in a different service model perspective, and also librarians who have tenure who, when they're suggested that to have this role, how does that fit into the, you know, so there are all these little complications when it comes from an IT realm and then makes its way to a library realm, which makes a lot of sense to me, but I don't think everybody understands that, so negotiating, you know, what that means.
So I think myself, I think I'm in a fairly fortunate position to be able to make the case where I started by talking to library leadership. So at our library, we have weekly meetings involving our UL, AULs, and then one level down as well, about a dozen of us at any given time. And I started socializing the idea about service management really immediately after the Cleveland meeting. And it took about a year for things to really start to take root and get the ideas there. And I think, We of course have trouble justifying dollars for any new position. So one of the reasons I was really fighting to get it involved in another position. So Ruth's position title is actually digital collections librarian. So a part of her work is also just preparing collections for our repository. So there is always a constant tension between different priorities of that. But I think people have started to see the value of it, but I think it also involved a lot of conversations, just kind of being patient and taking in different perspectives and also adapting as you go. Because I mentioned we also have project managers, and the project manager movement kind of started in parallel with talking about product owners, and part of it was trying to find a nice balance between those as well, and trying to not just stick to this is the pure definition of Agile and this is how product owners are supposed to work, as opposed to, well, within this place, what might work well, right? So kind of being open-minded and doing something like no one else is doing it is okay if that's the way that's going to work well in your place.
Well said.
I think one of the things too that maybe we're starting to discuss at Oregon State is this idea that that product owner and, by way of association with service manager, play a really important role in advocacy in both directions, outwards and inwards. And if there's nobody advocating for work to be done on a product, then the work's not going to be done. So that without an advocate and without an owner of some sort, it feels like it's harder to get work done for that product. And so there may be a way to say, we find it difficult to prioritize this product if there's nobody asking us to prioritize for it, and kind of pushing that back onto the community of kind of potential product owners and saying, like, so who's going to take advocacy responsibility for this thing and help shepherd along the process? Maybe that approach could be useful.
That's good.
And real quick, feel a bit privileged because a lot of my coworkers are product owners on stuff, like Nick Giannis. So it's kind of nice to have them around. We don't talk too much because our products are very different. But we start in that role, so like they know what it is and what we do at IUM, and it's just kind of nice to have. And working in the digital library program there, everybody sort of understands, so it's a good environment, so it's kind of a luxury in that sense.
Well, it's 7 after 8 after, and we're over at the few minutes back, so I just want to say thank you all for coming out, and thank you, prisoners. It was a great conversation.